Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 170, one stop for manga news and commentary for the week of July 28th, 2014. I am your main host, Derek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mo.
It's morning?
Ish.
Oh my god, I just realized it's morning. Ah.
Wait, what time did you think it was?
Not morning.
Okay, you're weird.
Wait, did you see a word?
Are you high?
No, I was shooting zombies and I totally forgot what I was doing. Oh, I was shooting zombies. I got upset over something. And then, well, I started reading some, more other manga. Well, reading manga that I hadn't been caught up on lately since they've been, like, gone far ahead.
Right. Okay, I see. Alright, well, let's go ahead and get into the news, shall we?
Yeah.
Starting with the Japanese comic rankings for July 14th through the 20th. And in 10th place, if it would load for me, there we go. In 10th place, we have Blue Exorcist, volume 13.
9th place, Case Closed. 84, volume 84 edition with 8 postcard set. Why do you need a postcard? Well, at least we know the Japanese value their mail. They're writing mail, you know?
I don't think anyone ever uses those to actually send mail.
It's true. I still have these One Piece coasters from, like, Comic-Con 2009 still, and they're still sitting in their nice plastic. I'm like, do I ever use these?
You'd better not use them. That'd be crazy. All right. 8th place, Kindaichi Shonen no Jikenbo R, The File of Young Kindaichi Returns, Volume 2.
Oh, yeah, and also some of them are Full Metal Alchemist too. But yeah, 7th place, Noragami, Volume 11.
6th place, Chihaya Furu, Volume 25.
5th place, Kingdom, Volume 35. Holy crap, I need to catch up on that too.
4th place, Daya no A, Ace of Diamond, Volume 42.
That's the baseball manga. 3rd place, Case Closed, Volume 84, without the postcards.
Yeah, apparently people didn't want the postcards that bad. Alright, 2nd place, Maji, Volume 22.
1st place, Fairy Tail, Volume 44.
Okay. It is kind of nice to see when Fairy Tail comes out, it's on top, unless it happens to come out at the same time as One Piece, in which case, it... yeah... no.
Yeah. But so where's one dude right now, I see, on this? Oh, 33rd.
Indeed. Alright, well, next one. We have New York Times manga bestseller list for July 13th through the 19th. And in 10th place, we have Yu-Gi-Oh! Zeo, Volume 5.
9th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 3.
8th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 2, for the love of...
7th place, Nisekoi, Volume 4.
6th place, UQ Holder, Volume 2.
Okay, when I get that certain part, I'll give you a chance. I'll make sure that you know to get back to it. I'm still reading because I like it.
We'll talk about it sometime.
Yeah. 5th place, Sword Art Online, Aincrad.
4th place, Sword Art Online, Fairy Dance, Volume 1.
I almost thought it said Aincrad. I was like, wait, why are there two Aincrad? 3rd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
2nd place, Attack on Titan, No Regrets, Volume 1.
Clearly has no regrets in being 2nd place. 1st place, Naruto, Volume 66.
Indeed. Alright, for the North American anime and manga releases for July 20th through the 26th. For the anime releases, we have Appleseed Alpha, Blu-ray, and DVD versions available.
Right,
we also have The Devil as a Part-Timer DVD and Blu-ray Complete Series Limited Edition or Regular Edition.
We have Hitalia, The Beautiful World DVD Set Limited Edition and DVD Set. We have My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu DVD Complete and Blu-ray Collection.
Yep. No, the Teen Romantic Comedy is only DVD. We do have the Severing Crime Edge Blu-ray and or DVD complete collection.
That one I need to get caught up on too. That one is a little weird. It reminds me of a series where killing is involved. So I can say it's weird. I didn't get that far, and it's a problem.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay, manga releases.
Mm-hmm.
We have Battle Angel Alita Last Order, Volume 4, Omnibus.
Yep, we have Black Butler, Volume 17.
Bloodland, Volume 5.
Gantz, Volume 32.
Enclosed called Bat. What?
I have no idea what this is about.
I'm going to look it up a little bit.
I don't know, it seems like a shoujo or Jose series. Looks more like a Jose series, hence why Jose. I have no idea what that is.
Are you Jose?
Yep. The Inferno Devices, Clockwork Princess.
Nice title. Iniboku SS, Volume 4. I never ever see those titles.
Is This a Zombie, Volume 4? 8.
If that thing's a zombie, I would shoot. I mean, it's a manga title, sorry. MPD, Psycho, Volume 11.
No matter how I look at it, it's you guys' fault that I'm not popular. Yeah, sure podcast listeners. Sorry, yes, I am going to make that joke every time that a new volume of that comes out. You better hope it ends soon.
It'd be funny if I could read it too. Mm. I'll probably start reading. Anyways, Omamori Himari, Volume 12.
Pandora Hearts, Volume 21.
Oh, that one too. Soul Eater, Volume 21.
Mm. Soul Eater Not, Volume 3.
Umineko, When They Cry, Episode 4, Lines of the Golden Witch, Volume 1, Series, Volume 7. What?
I don't pay attention to Umineko or Higurashi. It's all weird.
I don't want to read that. I mean, it's like a mystery in something in a way.
Yeah, but they're confusing. But anyway, let's see. Other releases, Excel World, Novel 1.
Oh, and Dragon Girl Monkey King, The Art of Katsuya Terada, art book.
Cool. All right, what other news do we have?
Okay. Osamu Tezuka's The Mysterious Underground Man wins Eisner Award. You see?
What?
Doesn't matter if you're dead, you can still win awards.
Wait, how did he... What?
I don't get it either. Oh, and Hayao Miyazaki was inducted into the Hall of Fame at the ceremony of San Diego Comic-Con.
Okay, cool.
That's good. I never haven't gone to since 2010.
Yeah. Why don't you go represent the podcast, yo?
Well, something I learned about the Comic-Con, actually, is that according to an article I just read, actually on ANN, pretty amazingly, is that the person said that Comic-Con is not really a place for anime. It's not really an anime place to go to. It sells anime stuff, but not as much in a bunch as Anime Expo or other ones.
Well, true. True,
so
true.
if you're an anime fan, you like going to conventions, the biggest anime convention, manga anime convention would be Anime Expo.
Hmm.
Is all I'm gonna say.
Where's that again?
Los Angeles.
Oh, cool. Maybe someday.
Or is it Anaheim? I totally forget.
Maybe someday, but I can't be bothered to take the time off work and drive down there.
I could go there. It's not that far from me. I just don't want to deal with the traffic. You know, Los Angeles traffic is just insane.
Indeed. All right, what other news do we have?
Well, I wanted to mention... Okay, whatever.
Just do it.
Udon Entertainment licenses Kill la Kill manga and more. These also being three more manga classics, 9 art books, Robotech art book project, and a Katamari comic. Okay, I did not even know there's a Katamari webcomic at all.
I think I just heard thunder. Even the gods are displeased with Kill la Kill. No, wait.
What? I like Kill la Kill.
No, sorry. I actually got confused, and I was hoping that it was actually Akamega Kiru that got licensed, and then that joke would have actually reflected my opinion. But no, sadly, the Thunder God hates Kill la Kill, which just means he has bad taste in anime and manga. Whoop, just thundered again.
Oh, I'm gonna Zeus,
move on. Zeus. Screw Zeus. Thor.
He has thunderbolts too.
Thor. Thor has a hammer.
Yeah, but well, so something else. No. That's something else topic. Wandering Sun Shimura is going to launch Koiji manga in August. Okay, the story about this one is about a girl named Mame whose family. Mm-hmm. Runs a public bath. She has held on to feelings of unrequited love for her childhood friend for 10 years. The title of the pun on Koiji, a word for gluttony.
Bloodening?
Gluttony.
Oh, gluttony. For a sec, I was like, bloodening? Is this about Is this going to be about puberty? Because that sounds a little uncomfortable. All right. All right.
Oh, it wasn't.
And let's see, what else do we have?
You're not going to like this, you personally. The World of Nauru and Pacific Rim win Saturn Awards.
Pacific Rim, yes. The World of Nauru, what the hell is wrong with the people in charge of this award?
Also, Guillermo del Toro, Guillermo del Toro live-action film beats Gargantia, Psychopaths, Hatema Inverted, and Yamato 2199.
Weird.
Yeah, just so you know, that one series you hated, it ended in 2012, which is like 2 years ago.
Well, it's a good thing it ended, because that was a... I only ever read the first chapter, and I could still tell it was stupid.
Well, I guess. I mean, dog lovers would not like it. Yeah, no. I just gave away the entire reason why you don't want to read it.
Well, yeah.
Even though you have a cat.
I still like dogs. But
I don't like dogs as much.
Nonetheless, yeah. All right, what else do we have?
Well, hang on, let me finish. The winners also include Best Japanese Long Story, Kororo Didake. I'm not going to read all that. It's too long. Okay, sorry. You have to go check on Anime News Network for that, guys. Kodansha USA adds Yamada-kun and the Seven Witches Let's Dance a Waltz manga. Okay, so those two then.
Right. Oh, cool. Yay, Yamada-kun. I should probably get caught up on that.
It has an anime, I believe, or anime are in the works, or the anime's already out. I don't know.
It's not out yet. I've been.
Oh, well, the anime's in the works.
Yeah, that...
I'm sorry, Megane-kun told you Megane-chan didn't really get...
Ah, that is such a shame. But then again, that one also kind of had one of those crappy endings where it's like, hey, one of the ongoing plot threads is going to be how, like, these two characters like each other, or how this one character has a crush on this other character, but we're not going to resolve it at the end because...
Because if they resolve it, the shipping won't even work anymore. No, seriously.
Oh, shut up. That is the dumbest reason ever. Who gives a flying fuck about the shippers? Quite honestly. I mean, seriously. I've shipped in the past, so I care about shippers. But at the same time, why should any professional writer give two flying fucking fucks about a bunch of shippers and whether or not they will like it or not? I mean, come on.
Well, apparently the majority of them do, because they never resolve their freaking romantic interests for the main character every freaking end of the series.
There has to be a better reason for it. I know.
I
mean, and it's weird. I mean, it makes sense for a series like, say, for example,
when it's unresolved, it actually gives the fans a better chance to actually, you know, keep that series in their mind, even though they didn't, you know, didn't go the way they wanted to. It keeps them in their mind, and they get to do whatever they want with it. You know, it's like
I wouldn't want anyone to keep my series in mind if the only thing they remembered was, hey, what the fuck was up with that shitty ending? I mean, seriously, Ranma 1/2 is tainted because it has a pretty awful ending. I mean, people try to remember the good stuff, but then they always come back to the actual ending, and you're like, that was horseshit. So, that doesn't make any sense. It has to be a different reason. And, I mean, I can understand it for a series like, I don't know, Tenchi Muyo, where it's all about, look at all these harem... these girls in his harem and whatnot. Oh, we won't resolve it because you can resolve it in your own mind, because that's lazy writing. And yet, the weird thing is, a lot of the other harem series, like, let's see, the ones that I can think of off the top of my head, Love Hina, and, was it...
Wait, it didn't end the way I thought it would end?
Oh, no, Love Hina.
Oh, yeah,
The two characters end up together. Ayori Aoshi. The two characters end up together, though that one made it very obvious what the pairing was going to be. So those ones were okay with resolving the romance, mostly because that was kind of the main point of the series. But all these other series that have, you know, that just, it's like, there are no love triangles. It's just, hey, this guy or this girl are too shy to tell the person they like about their feelings. And they don't even have the decency to resolve that. There's no reason not to. There's no, oh, I'm a fan, but I prefer this other pairing, so I would prefer if you don't end it with the, you know, the pairing that you intended. You know, because it doesn't set any kind of pairing like that up, so it just doesn't make any sense, and I'm sorry.
You mean like Urusai Yatsura?
No, that's not what I was thinking. Sorry. Okay. I recently read the spoilers for the ending of Sket Dance, and I'm kind of furious right now.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Because it's another one of those ones that ends with, oh, hey, we're going to end the last chapter, the girl that has a crush, that's, you know, had a thing for the main character more or less the entire series, we've had hints of that, of how perfect they are together and whatnot. She's going to confess her feelings, but then we're not going to give you his answer. And I'm like, that is the fucking shittiest thing I have ever seen. And not only that, but then it's like, oh, hey, look, it's years later, and he's traveling around America for some reason. I'm like, seriously? I mean, I get that all. It's a thematic ending and whatnot, but you seriously didn't give us the fucking answer. Why the fuck wouldn't you? This is stupid.
Was that thing actually, like, made a big deal throughout the series? Like, not a big deal, but, like
always especially towards the end, yeah. I mean, there was an entire arc dedicated, you know, there was an entire arc dedicated to how, you know, how she had feelings for him and he did everything he could to save her. And there's also another chapter that just shows how, oh, hey, look, they're so used to each other that they, you know, they don't even need words to communicate. And so, you know, it's really weird when the series does that and then they don't resolve that kind of plot thread. I'm like, why the fuck wouldn't you? And that is kind of what Yankee Kun to Megane-chan did. It did not resolve the feelings of the main character for the main girl, and it was kind of horse shit. I haven't even, man, I have not, man, I stopped reading that series. I mean, the Scanlations kind of slowed down for a bit, but I kind of stopped reading it completely. I don't even remember where I left off. Just knowing that the ending was going to be an unsatisfying piece of crap like that.
Yeah, it totally took him a while to find out where the heck I was on a comic IQ.
Just decided, you know what, I'm going to skip this. But Yamada-kun does things a little differently, so I can see why it would be brought, you know, why it would be licensed. So that's good. Whether I will buy it is a little questionable because it is a bit of a fan service series. So, yeah. Then again, I buy Fairy Tail. There's nothing worse in Yamada-kun than Fairy Tail.
I can't do it, but there's so many things that have been bought that keep me from getting to. Anyways. One last piece of news. Okay, remember that One Piece exhibition thingy?
Right.
Well, the South Korean court has ruled that the canceled One Piece exhibition can be held in that war memorial.
Okay. Cool. At least the South Korean courts aren't racist.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they use their minds, their judgments to, you know, hey, it's kind of stupid to, you know, cancel just because of the so-called rising sun flag in the manga.
Yeah, that's what was weird about the whole story was that it came across as someone was looking for an excuse. It's like, hey, let's go ahead and try to find something in the background, not made a big deal of, not even mentioned, just there on a minor character that was completely unimportant and didn't really do much of anything. Look at that. Clearly One Piece is pro-imperial Japan. And I'm like, are you people fucking serious? Did you not notice the ham-fisted Fishman Island arc where it basically said, racism bad? And I mean, I know a lot of people here looked at it as like, oh, this is a parallel between white people and black people. But then again, you think, okay, I don't think that's what he's thinking of. It probably has a lot more to do with, you know, the tensions between Japan and South Korea, for example. Which, you know, I mean, now that you think about it a little more, I mean, Hody Jones, nothing actually happened to him that should reasonably make him hate humans. Okay, humans never did anything to him. However, humans had done things in the past to other fishermen. And so you kind of start thinking, okay, well, where are the parallels here? Are the humans meant to be the Japanese and the fishermen are the Koreans or vice versa? But it does kind of make sense when you consider that there are people that hate either Japan or Korea based on just because that's what they were told to do, you know? I mean, you hear a lot about that, and you sort of start thinking, oh, wait a minute, so Hody hating humans for no good reason, is a bit of a parallel for kids hating Japan or Korea just because they're told you should hate them.
Well, I did. Yeah, I did kind of read some. I did read some bits about why South Korea has some sort of hatred for Japan, and it's one of the most bizarre and just sad cases of the kids being taught to hate Japan for no reason. Mm. You know, the world would be a lot better if we could just put aside our grudges. Israel, Palestine.
Oh, that's. Thank you for being topical, but that's not what we're talking about right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. South Korea. So much of that just pissed me off. Like,
yes. South Korea.
Yeah, South Korea.
No, but Japan. Yeah, nonetheless, that whole thing, it does seem really stupid. It was like, oh, hey, look, there's this thing in the background, and it looks something like this, you know, imagery that was used during World War II. But then you kind of think about it, that's like someone boycotting Disney because some animators slipped nudity into the Rescuers down under or something like that, you know? It's like, oh, look.
I heard someone actually did it on purpose because I don't know why, but they did it on purpose.
But, yeah, but, you know, I mean, you've got that and you see have something that somebody, you know, there's something in the background and you're like, oh, I boycott the entire movie. It's like, okay, but I don't know. It's not as strong an argument with One Piece because, you know, Oda himself put it in there. But then again, maybe he didn't. It could have been one of his, you know, one of his assistants that was in charge of backgrounds that put that in there. But either way, it's like, look, it's a small thing in the background. I mean, that's like being angry at World War II movies because of all the swastikas. It's like, guys, that's okay.
Well, on a lighter note, at least they could avoid movies like that and actually have their options open more still.
Well, true. But anyway, I think that's it for the news, so let's go ahead and move on to the review for this week. It's time for the manga review for this week's episode, and we are going over volume 7 and 8 of Attack on Titan. I mean, what? Yep. So, with these ones, starting with volume 7. To keep things simple here, they end up in the forest. They've captured the female titan and they're trying to break her out, but then she summons all these other titans to eat her. And somehow the person that's inside the titan manages to escape thanks to this. And she goes after Eren and the rest of Levi's team. And yeah, she starts off by killing them. And then she turns into a titan and continues to kill them. And it is pretty messed up because these are the first characters that we've really gotten any kind of development or attachment towards that end up getting the axe.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of, in the previous ones, in the Battle of Stoas, we didn't really, you know, get attached to any of the characters that died. Either they were background characters that were only mentioned for like a bit, or they were characters that we didn't get any development for them until after their death. Well, here with Levi's team, we actually get get to know them, and you know, you come to like them. There's a little bit of hints here and there between relationships between the characters, and you know, in some cases, the desires to have a different kind of relationship between two characters, and that's really where the tragedy of death really happens. I mean, if a character that we don't know about and don't care about dies, you know, so what? I mean, granted, if it were the real world and someone that we don't know dies, that's absolutely tragic because that's a real person. And, you know, people are supposed to not be dead before they grow old, you know, so there in the real world, it's a tragic event when someone you don't know dies. But at the same time, there's a part in our brains that just kind of distances ourselves for a lot of people. It distances them from the tragedy of events, like, you know, kind of what's going on in the world. We know that a lot of people are dying in the world in many different places, but at the same time, you've got a lot of people that just, there's something in their brain that keeps them from really considering what that means. Because, you know, if you, my theory is that if you actually spent your time thinking about exactly how devastating and horrible the things that are happening are, you probably wouldn't be able to function.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, there are some people that can. But, and in a similar way with fictional characters, I'm getting to a slightly lighter note. With fictional characters, it's kind of the same thing. If you don't know the character, you don't know anything about that, you know in theory that it's supposed to be sad, but you also feel like the author hasn't put in the effort to actually make it properly sad. And so, because you don't know anything about the character, I mean, there is, sometimes it's done, it can be done a little lazily, like, oh, hey, look, here's these two side characters. All you know is that these two are in love. And, oh, no, one of them's dead. Oh, that's such a tragedy. Oh, and I'm like, okay, theoretically, I understand that the, that someone who was in love and who had someone they were that was in love with them dying is a tragic thing, but at the same time, it's so obvious and we don't know anything else about these characters that, again, we kind of feel like, okay, well, whatever. With the Levi's team, we spend enough time with them to actually get to know them, get to like them. They have their own quirks and everything. And then it builds up on the idea of, oh, hey, there are things they want to do, or there are, you know, there are things in their future that they would like to do, basically. You know, like, for example, let's see, what was her face again?
Petra.
Petra, yes. How did I forget that one? Yeah, for example, Petra want, you know, kind of has a bit of a thing for Levi, and she's, you know, she wants to be with him. And that's kind of something, you know, that's obviously not the case now, but it's something that she's hoping to do in the future. And therefore, the fact that she dies before she's able to accomplish this is pretty tragic. And so...
it really hurts.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
That's why I was like, I don't want to read this arc.
Yeah. That's the... and what's really weird is that it's like all the spin-off ones, you know, like the comedic spin-off manga, all seem to ignore the fact that she is dead, which is kind of hilarious in a sad way. But still, you know, there's this kind of... this really shows the difference between the death of characters that don't deserve our, you know, our sadness because they didn't focus enough on those characters versus characters that have everything in place for a tragic death. And so that really does make the, you know, that just makes the whole thing. And what makes it even worse, and this is something that Isayama is really good at, is showing that, hey, they are winning, or hey, they could win. And then he just flips it around and says, oh, hey, no, they failed, they are dead. Like, for example, they've got the female Titan completely incapacitated, but then it turns out that right at the end, she was doing something to focus on getting her one eye fixed as opposed to getting both of them fixed so she can see again. And
yeah, that was pretty clever. I was like, holy.
Yeah, and it makes sense because a lot of times you have these sort of things where, like, for example, with the in Bleach with the fight against Aizen, where it was all about, oh, look, we're fighting, we're doing our best, but it's doing no good. Aizen is still beating us. And there it was completely unsatisfying because Aizen wasn't, you know, it wasn't because, oh, he did something clever. No, it's just, oh, wait, no, you don't know the actual extent of his power. Or, no, wait, no, he's still more powerful than you could ever imagine. Oh, he's just too powerful.
We never saw his Bankai.
No, we didn't, and I don't think we needed to. The only time that I really felt that he was, that he really did something really cruel and twisted and used the situation to his advantage to make it seem like, oh, he's lost, but no, wait, no, he hasn't, was when he used his power to trick Hitsugaya into thinking that Hinamori was him. And so Hitsugaya cuts her down, and then it reveals, oh, wait, look who you actually cut. And it's like, well, that's just messed up. Yeah. So that was good, but a lot of the other stuff was, I use my power. Lol, nope. I was like, aha, I have this, my ability is actually poison, even though that makes no freaking sense because my ability is to make my sword stretch.
Coco, it's call, he wants his power back.
Yeah, I think... Yeah,
well, okay,
but,
someone already has poison, though, but yeah, funny people.
Yeah, but so it's kind of like, okay, then, all right. But in this case, it does a really good job because, you know, it shows that they have the heroes have an advantage, but then it twists that on its head by taking that advantage away in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, and lots of series do that. Lots of series do. It's just how it's portrayed. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. It's a lot easier to do when it's actually foreshadowed. Like, hey, I got this ability coming up, and you know they do something with it, and then you're like, oh, okay, then you can take it. But if it just comes out of nowhere, well, yeah.
Mm, yeah.
But the thing with the female Titan is that she's an intelligent type.
Yeah, which really that is kind of like that's the reason that they lost is because they're fighting something that's as dangerous as a Titan, but also is smart like a human.
So, yeah, they're basically fighting a human that's giant as hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also there is... Yeah, also it's like... And then the fight continues between Eren, who's transformed into his Titan form, and you get some choice shots of the ruined bodies of his teammates. And I think the one in particular is when he's on the ground trying to punch the female Titan. And you just see in the foreground, you see Petra's... just body angled, like bent back against a tree in an angle that looks really uncomfortable and is really just.
I totally had a difficult time telling that was her. Oh crap, Edison. But I thought Oruo or what is his name, but Oruo definitely looks easier to see.
No, that's her. And some reason, the manga keeps focusing on her. It's like, yeah, whatever. Forget about the other guys. Oh no, the pretty girl is dead. Which is kind of. Which is like, oh yeah, that's. Yes, you certainly know your audience, but yeah, let's see. Okay, and basically,
don't beat very well, Pam.
Yeah, and basically, a good chunk of the rest of the volume after that is is the fight between Eren and the female Titan, and it gets kind of gory because you know they're able to survive without despite these massive injuries, and yeah, there's something about the design of the female Titan that's really weird in that when she bites Eren out, it's like she makes her jaw bigger by ripping through the skin that's holding her.
Yeah, I saw her face, I was like, I'm terrified. I'm so terrified. I'm really terrified.
Yeah. And it's like, oh man, it's like, look. Ugh, and that just the picture of her with the giant mouth is really creepily effective. Because the way that the female Titan is designed, she's in certain aspects, she still looks human enough that if one were so inclined, one could say, oh, hey, that is a moderately attractive design.
Pixis would say that.
Yep, exactly. And I'm sure...
You'd be like, I curse you, kid.
And I'm sure there are plenty of fans that would do that. We're like, you know, it's like, oh, she looks so much more human, so it's harder to... be as terrified of her as the Titans that go around biting people's, you know, eating people and biting them to bits and everything. And then that's why it's so effective when it shows that, hey, she can tear the skin of her mouth to open her mouth much wider, and then you see the 2-page spread of her with her giant gaping mouth, and you're just like, well, that was absolutely terrifying. Well done. But let's see, and then, yeah, so she takes him in her mouth, but doesn't bite or swallow him. And then, and then she tries to escape, and also you've got Levi that comes onto the scene, and what's also kind of interesting is that just the way it shows how he, it shows him going by his dead men and sort of, you know, how he reacts to each of them, he kind of, for a good chunk of them, he kind of just ignores them. And then it shows that he sees Petra's dead body, and he kind of lingers there. And so you just kind of think, oh, okay, interesting. He's lingering on her, so what does that mean exactly? It sort of it sort of gives you this idea of, okay, does that mean that he had special feelings for her? If that's the case, then that means that her death doubly tragic because now he's affected by it as well. And that's, you know, that's how death, you know, that's how you can make death mean something. For example, with One Piece, when a prominent character died, the whole point was not that, oh, we as fans, we liked him so much, he spent so much time in the manga. No, what was important was how the person close to him reacted to the death, which was not good. So, but yeah, and then for the rest of the volume, you've got Levi and Mikasa kind of teamed together, and they managed to get cut Eren free and escape with him. And it was really, and that scene, just the fact that they are able to accomplish this, even though they don't kill the female Titan, but you kind of get the sense of they probably could. If both of them had have been there when Levi's team tried to fight, they probably would have won. And then, yeah. And that just adds another level of the, Yep. And then, of course, let's see, they end up going back to the wall because they're like, well, we failed. And then you get a scene that is, you know, Eren seeing two kids that remind him of himself and Mikasa admiring the serpent cord. He's like, no, I know you won't listen to me, but no.
Don't become like me.
He's like, no, don't admire me. It's messed up. And then, of course, you get, and then of course you get the horrible page where Petra's dad is just sort of like saying, oh, hey, thank you for taking care of my daughter, etc. It's like, you know, she's, you know, she really likes you and everything, etc. You know, it's like, oh, it's too early. I think it's, she's too young to get married. And you just got Levi's face. It's just this, oh, Lord, why? It's just, his face is brilliant and it's kind of hilarious in a way. If it weren't so sad. In the anime, it's even doubly, you know, awkward. Because you're just like, the guys, you just get the voice actors work and it's just like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. And yeah, and you just, and you don't even see what happens when the guy, you know, when Levi has to tell him, your daughter's dead. Because they kind of have to leave her behind. And so yeah, we don't need to see that because we know it's going to be awful. And then, yeah, and then we end the volume with basically the narration saying, yeah, because they screwed up so much, they're kind of in trouble with the military police now in the royal capital. And, yeah, let's see. And also, of course, the preview for the next volume where Armin slips and bashes his shin against the stairs. One moment of carelessness leads to hellish agony that seems like it will go on for eternity. Does something lie beyond this torment?
Wait, Molly, he slips and bashes his shin. That reminds me of Family Guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. It's like, Volume 8, coming soon. Really? Also, asterisk, then, like, not a real
pages,
preview.
And then, like, 15 pages of Armin just going, ah!
Also, the one thing that really annoys me about the layout
or an entire chapter
of this in the volume is that the Volume 8, coming soon, after 8, the coming soon part is not lined up with the where it says Volume 8. It's just like out of sync and I'm like, ah. But yeah, so that was Volume 7, which finishes up the female Titan arc, or well, not the female Titan arc, but what are people calling this arc anyway?
Female Titan arc?
I don't know. Scouting
arc or something? I don't know.
Yeah, so they get back. And I mean, the story for this is not over yet, but, you know, they get back. And, yeah, so this was kind of like the volume where it starts off with, aha, we have won. Oh, crap, we have lost. And it's like, aha, we are winning. Oh, crap, we have lost. And then, aha, we have,
it's called the Female Titan.
We got Eren back. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like, we got Eren back. Yay, we're back home. Oh, crap, the families and loved ones of all the people that died. Crap! So, yeah, it's one hell of a volume, I must say. So, yeah, I think I've given my opinion of Volume 7. What's your opinion, Mo?
I don't want to read this again.
All right. Yeah, it is kind of uncomfortable, isn't it?
They were actually, like I said, they all had quirks. They were all really cool. I mean, even Olu was a bit of a, you know, prick, but he had his own reasons why he was doing that. There was that part of the bit where they're talking about the first time they first saw the Titan and talking about how they peed their pants or something, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, wait, don't tell them that. And then it was like, well, just in case you're wondering, I never did that. And then it was like, I didn't either. Maybe the other two guys look bad.
Yeah, it's like, don't worry, I'm being lighthearted about this. And it's like, no, lol. Just kidding. He's like, yeah, we're going to make you look bad. He's like, wait, what? And Petra is like, I didn't do any. I didn't wet my pants either. He's like, guys, you jerks. He's like, what? You betrayed me. You betrayed the law.
Mm.
Or law. Something like that. Yes. Yeah, so it's certainly, yeah, it really was very effective, I think, overall, with just the whole, hey, look. They may win, but no, they didn't.
I actually thought Olo would have lived at least, to be honest.
Which one?
The guy who bites his mouth.
Really? What makes you say that?
I don't know. Probably because he says he bragged about his kill count, but he actually has a record to show for it, though.
That is true. He is. Yeah, that's the thing that also makes it, you know, adds to the tragedy, is these are all very competent fighters. They are all, you know, very strong. They have many kills or assists. And so these are... Yes. But, you know, these are all people that realistically should have been able to stand up to any Titan. They just happened to be dealing with a Titan that was abnormal. And that led to them dying, which is a big tragedy.
Such in a sense, this arc kind of like you said, it shows in a way that even no matter how good you are, you can die against these Titans.
Quite true.
Well, it could have been any regular times it could have killed easily, but this is a smart one, very smart human-like one.
Yeah, and well, let's move on to Volume 8, shall we?
Oh yes, that volume. Okay, yeah, right. There we go. That feels a little bit light-term-ish.
Yep. Just a little bit, yeah. But so we begin Volume 8 with getting to know the, in the Stohest district, we get to know some of the military police and how you've got a bunch of either idealists or lazy people in the group, but all the commanding officers are all these good-for-nothing lazy people that have all the newbies do all the work, and you get introduced to at least one guy in particular who is, you know, Marlow, who is intending to clean up the military police brigade, but, you know, doesn't know, you know, everyone's like, oh man, you're an idealistic idiot. And you've got Annie gets, Armin comes and asks Annie, is like, hey, we need help to get Aaron out of here. And they try to go down to this through this tunnel, and Annie's just, no, I'm not doing that. And then, Armin reveals that, hey, he knows exactly that she's the female Titan because he knows that she had Marco's vertical maneuvering gear that she showed in the inspection after, you know, people are trying to find who killed the test subjects, the Titans. And I've always kind of wondered about that. I was like, okay, you used your own and then you used Marco's to pretend like you didn't use yours, but then, you know, wouldn't it have made more sense to use Marco's to kill the Titans with and then show yours? I was like, no, I didn't use it then. So, I mean, there's no way she knew that, you know, Armin would realize it, but still, you'd think that let's take some variables into consideration and say, okay, if I need to keep it, make it look like things are as normal as possible, therefore, I will present to anyone my maneuver gear instead of someone else's. But, yeah. And then Armin basically says all the reasons why he believes that it's her and she, you know. And let's see. And then from there, She tries to transform, but all the other people from the Survey Corps grab her and gag her so she can't bite herself. But then it turns out that it's not so much gagging, biting, as it is just causing pain, because she has a ring with a spike on it that she uses to cut herself, and she turns into the Titan, and she tries going after them, and Aaron is like, oh, no, I can't, is like, I can't transform because I can't, I just can't fight her. I can't believe that she's, a bad person and et cetera and all that. And then finally, Armin and Mikasa are like, oh, hey, we're going to go after, we're still going to fight. And Aaron is like, okay, you know what, screw it. Maybe I don't want to think of Annie as my enemy, but also my best friends are slightly more important. So he transforms and fights her. And the rest of the volume, or a good chunk of the rest of the volume, is the fight and all of the massive collateral damage that it causes, such as crushing an entire church full of people, which is...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was totally insane, because it's like they were like pray and, believe in your God, and all of a sudden, I'm like, well, that was so much of a prayer.
Yeah, on the one hand, you're like, oh, so tragic. On the other hand, these guys have all been portrayed as absolute lunatics.
That's why I laughed so hard. I was like, wow.
So... It is kind of like,
I have no heart, but when the people are lunatics, I kind of don't care.
Yeah, what's also kind of interesting is that you see that since, they die because Annie falls on top of them because she was knocked into them, and when she looks down and she sees the people that she's killed, she kind of reacts in a, she seems a little bit horrified. And so she just tries to escape while people are chasing after her, trying to... cut her down while Aaron is continuing to fight her. And, they fight. She manages to just completely obliterate him and then decides, I'm out of here, and tries to climb the wall. And then, Mikasa manages to, keep her from escaping by, cutting her up and whatnot. And then Aaron holds her down and... He's bitten, I guess he's ripped off or bitten off her limbs, so she can't move. What's also kind of interesting and worth pointing out, and I don't think, it doesn't happen in the manga, but in the anime they do this interesting thing with showing like Eren after he's been defeated, he like starts getting hotter and like almost looks like he's consumed by it being, he's on fire. But that doesn't happen in here at all. So I'm just wondering, I wonder what the anime was doing there. But, yep. Anyway, they decide, they try to capture Annie, but she uses some kind of ability that encases her in crystal that they're not able to break. And so they're just, that's annoying. Why can't we get... It's like, yeah, now what do we do? And then you also have this really creepy moment where the wall that was damaged, the surface kind of cracks and falls.
Oh.
And then Mikasa is right there and she sees that there is a freaking massive Titan in the wall.
Titan spotted in my face.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, and I absolutely love her expression where it's just she's just like shocked and at the same time absolutely petrified. And... Yeah, and then we continue the trying to get Annie out, but, she's kind of not getting out anywhere. And then cut back to Mikasa looking at the, she's the only one that sees the Titan right now because the smoke is blocking everyone else's view. And Mikasa sees that it is actually an alive Titan because it can, it turns to look at her.
I'm like, uh-oh.
Yep, and then the rest of the Survey Corps sees the Titan, and they're just like, wait, what's going on here? And the minister, Nick, who was the one with the, with the people that got crushed, says, hey, you need to cover it up. Don't let sunlight hit it. So they put this massive tarp over it and block the sun. And then Hungi is just, okay, what the heck's going on? And Nick's like, you know what? I'm not going to tell you. I can't. I'm not allowed. And then let's see. And then we kind of finish.
Oh, that part totally pissed me off.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, why? And then we kind of finish things off with, you know, Mikasa, Armin, and Jean with Eren, who's, you know, resting it off. And then Armin and Jean, no, Armin gets called because the commander wants to see him, and Jean decides, you know what, I'm out of here. We should, you know, should get out of here. And Mikasa's like, no, I'm going to stay. And let's see, and then we got the, yeah, we got the talk with Erwin and the, you know, the officials and everything. And then we, let's see, and then we end this volume by finding out that, yeah, turns out that Titans are have made it through Wall Rose. And so, yeah.
Then we kind of get a 2 days beforehand of why, of how it happened. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, and it's just like, well, that's...
I'm like, why you gotta do that?
It's like, that's messed up. And so, yeah, what I really like about that ending is that it moves, you know, it keeps the pace moving really well. We're not just, oh, all this boring political stuff. No, look, we're jumping right back into the next big story with the Titans. Yay! So, yeah, what do you think of this volume?
Well, the part about Annie being revealed to be the female Titan, that was, okay, in terms of the, I don't know how it works with the anime, but I'm sure the anime would make more obvious because people are pretty observant like you are. For me, when I found out it was Annie, I was like, huh. Because I was like, because for me, the reveal, the hints were because there's a chapter focusing on her, you know, opening with her, and I was like, okay, Annie, what Annie's doing, and then, oh yeah, we see him.
I can't remember if I was spoiled about that or if I legitimately figured it out, but
it
was pretty obvious. I mean, just from the female Titan's design, just in general, the base shape was, oh, hey, look, it's Annie.
And I think she had her fighting style or something.
Yeah, that was pointed out several times.
So. Yeah.
And I also have to say, I do like... I don't know, it's interesting that they reveal sort of who she is pretty early on. They don't spend a lot of time with them trying to figure out who she is. They get to her pretty quickly within a volume. But now she's kind of out of the story for a bit. And
although, I do have to admit, the part where they were trying to lead her, and I was like, okay, why didn't you all just, okay, when she said, you know, I don't see anybody around, it feels like the trap. I'm like, of course it's a trap. You want to make it like not feel like a trap, have everybody, just have some of them linger around so they don't, so she can't suspect them, and then bam, you get her. It's like this thing failed for on purpose.
Yeah.
It's just some things, I look at this and I go, why did you have to do it like this?
Indeed.
I mean, the part, okay, let me just go back to the previous one. I mean, the part where Eren could have, like, decided to turn to a Titan, that could have helped, but who knows, he could have gone on a rampage still, or maybe messed up and gone captured easily, but the other guy would. But in terms of this trap thing, that was just bogus. And then and then the other one, the one I got pissed about, was when we saw the giant titan in that wall, and Hange was like, "Hey, minister, you tell us what the hell's going on." And he was like, "Nope, can't tell you." I'm like, I saw that. I was like, "Dude, do you know how many people lost their lives just to finally get this close to an answer, and you decide not to give a single hint?"
Well, he can't. I mean, there's reasons for it, as we'll later find out. But
yeah. I would have slapped him. And then just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. It's
Behanga just throwing him in and saying, I'm not going to kill you.
I am quite a bit. I really
those
like
those two points got my blood boiling.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree. These are some of the really good parts of Attack on Titan. The interesting thing about it is that not that much. I mean, relatively, very little story has happened in Attack on Titan compared to a lot of other manga that we read. Yeah. It's like we've only had the major story arcs are, you know, the first to, you know, the prequel. The first attack, the attack on the
the first chapter.
Yeah, and then the second attack.
Sorry.
And then the going on the expedition, then capturing the female Titan, which is kind of in the same expedition part, and then you know the attack of the Titans inside the village, you know, the village walls.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the city, you know, just the walls. And then after that, we've got the stuff with you know, that all the stuff we have now, which is the oh hey look intrigue and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just I don't know. It's a little bit silly.
Yeah.
So, I have to say, just in general, it is kind of interesting how popular it's gotten, despite not having, you know, relatively not having that many stories. So, it's kind of curious. But, yeah, I do have to say, these volumes are very, they're definitely some of the most exciting volumes, and the part where I feel like a lot of people really got into the story. And there is kind of a sense of, oh, we don't know quite enough about these characters yet, but this one just does really feel like we're getting a little bit of a hint, but there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered.
In a sense, this is the art that probably will get people to go, okay, yeah, I'm definitely reading this. I mean, of course, it would be the other art with the trough, right?
Mm.
But, I can say, well, I'm not saying that the next arc might be my favorite, but I particularly like that one, probably because of how it wasn't. Well, when we get to that one.
Yeah, we'll get there. Actually, we'll get there next week because, right. So that finishes up volumes 7 and 8 of Attack on Titan. Next week we'll be talking about volumes 9 and 10, and then the week after, and then that will be the week that the Shokugeki no Soma first volume comes out. So we'll talk about that the following week. But, yeah, next you can look forward to Attack on Titan, Volumes 9 and 10. All right, did we have anything else that we needed to discuss here?
No, I can't think of anything related to Attack on Titan, other than that it's pretty popular, and thanks to it, it made other series similar to it, or have other aspects similar to it, make it more popular.
Right, definitely.
You know, that's kind of the genre more popular, which is nice, actually.
Indeed. Yeah, and so, all right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for the manga review commentary. Yes. The manga commentary section. Yep.
Manga style.
Yep, starting with Naruto chapter 686, Bequeath and Inherit, and we begin with the dead.
Oh no, that color spread.
Shush, we're not there yet. The page before that. Not much to say. It's the Hokage talking to the sage guy.
Actually,
anyway.
It was on the table of contents, you fool.
Was it? Yes, it was.
Well,
but
half of it is.
Part of it, yeah. But let's talk about the color spread. So you have to imagine, I think I've decided the most entertaining way to read Naruto is not as an invested shipper, but as a shipper observer. Because I swear it's like Kishimoto doesn't know what he wants. He's constantly flip-flopping between who he intends to pair up with Sakura, if he even intends to, you know? So you'll have moments where it's like Naruto being like, oh yeah, she's my girlfriend, and her saying no, or moments where she's thinking fondly of him, or moments where she's thinking, oh, I'm still in love with Sasuke, or moments where she realizes how much of a massive dickhole he is, and then moments where he does that one rare kind thing as if it excuses the attempt at murder. And then you have a color spread where for some reason she is wearing short shorts, because when in the Wild West, of course you're gonna wear short shorts. You gotta show off the legs. That's why the guys are wearing short. Oh, right. Sexism.
She wears short shorts even in the winter anyway.
Well, yeah, but nonetheless, if you're going for a theme, it's kind of ridiculously pandering, and in a not even very sexy way, because it's not like she's showing off her legs at all. It's just they're in the Wild West and she's wearing short shorts. When any self-respecting human being would wear long pants, in
because
the wild
west. Because a rattlesnake will bite them or...
Well, not just that, but sun, wind, dust, sandstorms and things like that.
And scrapes.
I mean, quite frankly, speaking as someone that lives in the approximation of where this color spread would be taking place, you do not go hiking and wear booty shorts. Mind sure if you want to wear, you know, shorts that go to your knees, that's probably a decent idea, but you wouldn't if you were out in the middle of nowhere riding horses. And also the American in me, of course, is saying, why are they riding with their guns just out like that? No, you're going to shoot someone that you're not intending to shoot.
Well, we can see a sausage pulling is going up at the sky. He's going to shoot the sky, apparently.
Apparently. It's like he's actually trying to reach around behind him and aim it at her, and he's like, get off of me!
I just want to say Naruto's hat looks like a face.
It does, kind of. It's like the... So that's what happened to the sorting hat after Hogwarts. But, yeah, still, like I was saying, I mean, the only way to really enjoy this series is to just imagine how annoyed the shippers must be, because you've got all these moments that the shippers that want Sasuke and Sakura together, you got all these moments where they're just like, why is she being disappointed in Sasuke? No, she must love him. And then Kishimoto decides, I'll give them a little something. Here, he's not being a jerk. Oh, here's a color spread with her arms wrapped around him. And so you just kind of start thinking, you don't know what you're doing, do you? You don't actually know how you want this to end, so you're providing enough hints for the series, for the story to go either way with these characters. And
why is it that even though the shipping is not really important to anything, why is it that this one bugs us the most?
Well, for one, Sasuke is a piece of turd shit.
Yes, that too.
That's right. I said that right. I know what turd means. I said exactly what I meant to say. Sasuke is the piece of shit of a piece of shit. And so, yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I will never support any ship involving this dickweed. So
okay, let's move on to the action.
Yes, let's move on. It's like, no, we totally don't care. What are you talking about? Ha,
that
ha,
color
laughing.
Gave me cancer for like a minute after I read it.
Indeed.
Yeah,
well, let's talk about the actual chapter. And it was, I don't know. It was okay, though it did kind of piss me off when it pulled the, look, Naruto's dead. No, he's not. He just passed those orbs that identified himself off to someone else. I was like, wait, he can do that? That would have been nice if that had have been established before, but whatever. And then let's see, then we move on, and then they end up on a thing that's a bunch of spiky pyramids, and they're weighed down. For some reason, she too
they're
is weighed
down.
They're
in gravity land.
Mm-hmm. And then we have another one of those moments where it's like, oh, it's Obito and Kakashi and Rin. Yay, Rin! She's back! I'm so glad that we're having imagery involving her. She meant so much to us readers because of all her massive and varied contributions to the series.
What did she do?
Nothing!
Exactly.
Yes. Ugh. I do kind of like how Obito, you know, uses his power to save Kakashi, and even though it's like, you know, he's like, I'm saving my friend, but I'm playing it like, Kakashi would just be in the way, so I'm gonna die and go be with Rin. You get to stay here. Nee, nee. I'm gonna get some booty. You're not. And it's like, I really, really, really hope, because Obito's, Rin has pissed me off so much that I seriously hope that when he gets to the afterlife, Rin is going to be all, so, how long do you think till Kakashi gets here? Because honestly,
50 years.
there's such a thing as being, you know, as someone deserving to be with a person they love. And then there's such a thing as them pissing me right the fuck off with everything they do in the series. And me deciding, you know what? I want everything to go wrong for you. I don't care if you're meant to be a sympathetic character and you're probably going to get your happy ending, more or less. I want you to be unhappy because you pissed me off. Everything you do in this series, just like Sasuke, is completely awful. So, yeah. It just goes to show.
Those are so awful.
Yeah, it,
as characters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, except for Itachi, I'll just say that.
I mean, that's the thing. Obito was a great character in Kakashi's backstory and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was fun. That was really nice. It was really tragic. But then the way he gets brought back, and you're just like, oh, jeez. But, yeah. I mean, this series is just, everything it does serves to piss me off. So, anyway, let's move on to Bleach, chapter 590.
It's so bright.
Indeed, and
I can barely see. Who are you?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I was kind of thinking, remember that bit in Gin's backstory where you see the bit with, you know, these three Shinigami Soul Reapers had beat up young Rangiku and kind of just left her there, and people were speculating, oh, what happened to her? Did she get raped? And a lot of fans were like, nah, Kubo wouldn't go there. That's not his style. And then you get a chapter like this where you've got the zombie Bambietta who is going on about, like, need your, I need, GG, please, I can't anymore, I need it. And I'm just like, did they accidentally upload a hentai of Bleach instead of the actual chapter? What's going on here? Because, yeah, that is, I mean, it doesn't specifically say what it is, so Kubo still maintains his not having any major actual sexual themes in his series, but at the same time, it's kind of one of those, you're getting real close there, buddy. Suddenly I'm starting to rethink all the other innuendo that you've had in this series. Although it does remind me of the weird innuendo bit with Mayuri and Nemu, which was kind of, wait, what did he do? It was clearly something weirdly sexual, so suddenly I'm thinking, Kubo, are you constantly putting in weird sexual stuff into your series where it's inappropriate? Because I don't know what Bambietta is asking for, and this is probably going to be one of those, oh, you're the one that thought of it, you gross pervert. But it seriously sounds like she's saying, I need your penis. Which I don't know if that's actually what it's supposed to be, but it does seem like Kubo has read a few too many hentai manga and is copying from them.
Resisting the urge to smack something.
Yeah, it's really weird and also really disturbing, because not only do we have this creepy girl who turns out to be a creepy guy pretending to be a creepy girl, but
Gigi might be hermaphrodite.
Yeah, but yeah, and then you also have the weird implications of, hey, this creepy man has sex with his zombies, which I'm just, okay, this is very bizarre. Which, I would be a lot more upset if Bambietta was a character that I actually cared about.
So. Oh, yeah, she is fodder. All of the Stern Breeders are fodder.
Yeah.
It's been hinted that they are fodder.
Pretty much, but yeah, and then the rest of the chapter is okay. I mean, Mayuri uses his science to combat Bambietta's ability, and then turns out, like, I have all these other zombies, and I love, I mean, as awful as Mayuri is, I love his reaction. It's like, oh my, now this is a problem. They may be zombies, but they were originally officers of the 13 court guard squads. It would be too painful for me, basically one big ball of love with a spinal cord growing from it, to fight them. It's like, I have no other choice, I'll need to call in someone who has no attachment to them to fight. And then he's like, I leave this to you, Arrancar. And this is both stupid and amazing, because I saw the first one on the right, and I was like, dude, it's that guy! That guy was awesome! Like, he fought Ichigo, but he
Nino
was...
and Nino.
That guy, yeah.
I remember the Nino guy. That's why I've always known him as the Nino guy.
Yeah. And I also have to laugh a little bit, because of course Kubo can't kill off a cute girl, so Tsuruchi is still there.
Fire.
What?
You say you can't kill up a two girl.
Well, he hasn't yet.
Bambieta
is technically still around.
She's a zombie.
Well, yes, but she's still around and moving, but...
Yeah, but if you've seen where Gigi used her as a shield, she's kind of not all together anymore for sure now.
But yeah, well, yeah. But also the fact that she was kind of introduced as an absolute insane person. While most of the other female characters have something redeeming, Bambieta, on the other hand, was, hey, she's the one that either she kills people after sex or she tricks people into thinking they're going to get sex and then she kills them. So that's kind of an unredeemable quality, you know? Well, Bambieta, Tsuruchi, jeez, letters too close to each other. Tsuruchi, on the other hand, was kind of annoying and everything, but she wasn't, besides being a soul-eating monster, she wasn't a bad person, per se. And then you get Loopy, who, of course, the guy that nobody cared about because Grimmjow finished him off. He didn't even fight any of the Soul Reapers. And then you get, what's his face? The, big, muscular...
It looks like he's doing a JoJo's Bizarre Adventure pose.
You totally know he's inspired by that. But I forget what his name is, but...
I don't know.
He's the one that was all, oh, I am feminine, etc., even though I am a hulking mass of muscle. But...
Did he fight Chad?
No, this one fought, what's his face? Not Ikaku, Madarame. No.
Wait.
No.
Really? Wait.
No, wait, was his name No, it's not Madarame. That's from Genshiken.
Ikaku.
Not Ikaku. He didn't fight Ikaku.
Yumichika.
That's the one. Yes. There we go. Yes, him. There we go, yeah. So, yeah, they fought, but it's kind of interesting how they have, like, it looks like they've either been healed or been stitched back together, which it's been a while, so I can't remember where they were each, you know, injured. But, yeah. I'm pretty sure that Ninjo guy didn't get the top of his head cut off, and Tsuruchi didn't get sliced across the face. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen, but yeah. Although I do have to wonder, okay, how the heck did they get away from those guys who were going around collecting the defeated Arrancar and killing them? But, oh well. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to talk...
Thank you!
Yes. World Trigger, Chapter 69, Giggity. Osamu Mikumo, Part 8. And, yeah, so Chika gets turned into a cube, and it's Osamu's job to try and keep her safe. So he heads back towards the base while all the others are fighting to, you know, help clear the way for him. But, unfortunately, they can't fight off all the rabbits because, yeah... They end up, ended up getting defeated and had to bail out. And I love that. It's like, sorry, I freed him up. And he just looks really abashed there. And let's see. And it's basically Osamu being pretty awesome throughout the, throughout the fight, trying to protect Chika and doing pretty well. But then in the end, and he needs some help, and Replica shows up and brings in one of the border rabbits. Interesting. So that is, that's new. I'm curious to see what happens next. This was a pretty awesome chapter. Just overall, awesome chapter. Lots of action, lots of fighting. And yeah, and we got to see Osamu being pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, and we also end with a great cliffhanger. That's what I really like about this show. It does a really good job with cliffhangers.
Did you say show?
Sorry, I was thinking in my head about the I was thinking about how the anime is going to be coming out next season.
True.
And so I was kind of just sitting there thinking, it's like, oh, show, yes. Anyway, great chapter. I liked it. Indeed. All right, shall we move on to Nisekoi, Chapter 132? Starting with...
I am very, that's a nice color, Dave.
I will say this. He does good color work. I'm a little iffy at the underside boob, from Haru, of all people. But okay then, moving on. This is really weird. It's like, this is one of those manga that I really want to recommend to some of my friends that like kind of romantic, sort of romantic comedies. But it's really hard to recommend because every once in a while there'll be fan service that's completely pointless. And I'm just, oh dear. So, yep. Anyway, the chapter itself is the beauty contest. And you've got all these different girls, and then Haru enters, and she enters in a sort of like candy shop girl dress and apron. And yeah, everyone loves it. And then we move on, and let's see, we get some pretty good faces from Haru, where you know, when they have Ichijo ask her a question, and she just, that face is pretty great. And then they're like, oh, come on, ask a better question. It's like, okay, would you prefer to date someone older or someone younger? And she's just like, someone older, and the face that she has when saying that is pretty hilarious. And then, of course, Paula, who is absolutely fantastic because she's all, I'm just gonna come in, be all stunning, and everyone's like, whoa, she's stunning. And she's doing it to win a year's supply of candy, and then Tsugumi says, okay, look, your face is pretty, wear something nice, and whatever you do, don't talk. So the moment they ask her for her name, she just stands there, and everyone's like, that was entry number 13, folks. And she just loved that. She's just like, ha, nailed it. And then, of course, we've got Marika, who shows up wearing a cloak, and then it turns out she's wearing a swimsuit, and she's like,
well, there's our swimsuit chapter of the day.
Yeah, I was actually kind of thinking, are they going to have a swimsuit portion? But then they answer that by her being disqualified because her costume isn't covering enough. And it's like, it's a high school, dang it. It's like, we can't have someone walking around in a swimsuit. So
they actually have standards. Well,
yeah,
what?
That was pretty hilarious, I thought. Just randomly one of the, I guess, the decency committee or whatever showing up and being like, you're disqualified. And then we end up with the finalists, and you've got Haru's in there, and then you got Paula that was eliminated, and she's just like, ah, why? And then we end the chapter with a special final contestant, which is somehow, for some reason, they've decided that Onodera is, Kosaki, is going to be involved in the competition. And so you're just like, wait, what? So, interesting, yeah, now we've got, of course, the obvious person that Raku would vote for. And so I kind of wonder where this is going to go. Yeah, so I enjoyed this chapter. It was funny. Some of the fan service at parts was a bit much, but still, it was a very funny chapter. I enjoyed it. It's one of those, I don't know, somehow Haru, after discovering that Ichijo and Shitoge aren't actually dating, and discovering that she actually likes him, and realizing that he's not the awful person that she thought he was, but then after that deciding to support her bigger sister, just that character change really helped.
Mm-hmm.
Make her a more enjoyable character. So, well played. I could have done without.
You kind of said all I want to say about the chapter. I almost thought that Kosaki was actually being a special judge. I didn't actually catch part of she's being an extra contestant. I'm like, what the heck?
I thought she would have been a contestant from early on, so I was a little surprised when she wasn't. But then she came in at the end. I was like, oh, okay.
And notice how Ruri just pushed her in.
Yeah, it's just Ruri just pushing her in with her Lucy outfit. And then, and just love, Kosaki's, just her expression is like, huh?
100% approved by Lucy. No, not that Lucy, the other Lucy.
Hey, speaking of Lucy, let's talk about One Piece chapter 754.
Oh, this chapter.
Yeah, this cover page, Jinbei with just this massive grin on his face. I'm just like, that's hilarious. Okay, Jinbei, you better join the Straw Hats, otherwise I will be disappointed because he's just that right amount of wacky that he just fits in. It's great. But, yep, so talking about the chapter itself, we see that Kinemon has finally found Kanjuro.
And Tanjiro did not turn out as I thought, as we all probably thought he would turn out.
He turned out as nobody expected. He's got like lipstick and
Kabuki?
Yeah, a bit Kabuki with like these dots on his very cheeks. Kabuki. And with his very kind of a weird haircut and sort of like a hunched over kind of pose. And yet he's still taller than as tall as Kinemon, despite his sort of hunched posture.
And he has like a paintbrush katana sword.
Yeah, that's, I didn't notice that at the first time around, but looking at
again. That was the first thing I noticed. I thought, wait, that is tail hilt, that's his paintbrush katana sword. What?
Yeah, it's like it's a paintbrush, but with a katana hilt. That's amazing. And then we find out why, because he has the ability to make paintings come to life.
Nice.
Oh, and not only that, but then when you look at another page, it actually has a tsuba on it. It's not just the entire handle as a katana hilt. It is, but it also has a tsuba where he holds it. And so that was kind of hilarious.
It makes sense because in Chinese and Japanese culture, in both cultures, I'll just say that when it comes to using the sword, it also helps. Mm-hmm. It actually is a requirement for the swordsman to also learn how to write as well. Like Musashi Miyamoto, he was not just a great swordsman, he was also a master calligrapher. Learning to use the calligraphy brush is also, in a way, the mastering the sword as well. So that was just pretty awesome. I saw, I was like, oh wow, people are going to think, oh, it's a paintbrush, he's going to beat people with a paint. No, you don't understand.
Yeah, but it turns out that he can make paintings come to life, and except he's a terrible artist.
Wait, worse than Luffy? No way. Nobody can be worse than Luffy.
Oh, he's close.
His came out a lot better than Luffy's. Luffy's wouldn't even be proportionally accurate.
Yeah. I love this. Like this, the ability is ingenious, but due to his terrible art, the poor sparrow can barely fly. And yeah, it is. Yeah, I just love that. And it's probably because he has a paintbrush and he's holding the paintbrush wrong. So, you know, it makes it hard for, you know, him to paint well. But yeah, so they get on there, and then they're about to leave, and all the people down there are like, hey, we need to get out of here too. We can help. We're loyal soldiers and gladiators. And then we get to the actual fight where we've got Blue Gilly gets taken out by
Dellinger.
Yep. And then we continue, we basically get Cavendish, who is saying, oh, hey, look, you know, do you really think that Doflamingo is going to let anyone survive this? The only way to win is to, you know, move onward and defeat Doflamingo. And so, you know, it's like his one mistake was gathering this assortment of powerful and belligerent miscreants for the Colosseum. And I'm like, his one mistake? I can think of a couple others, such as actually putting the Devil Fruit in the prize where the Devil Fruit prize is without intending to actually give it away.
His other mistake was letting Luffy live instead of just killing him right off the bat. What the heck?
Yeah, that too. And then Cavendish is like, I'm going to strike down Doflamingo. Luffy is like, no, I am. And Law's like, I told you it was mine.
And Kuros
is just like, I appreciate the thought, but I'll do it. It's like, hey, you said you were going to get the officer guy. It's like, that's a personal score. I need to defeat Doflamingo for King Riku. It's like,
being greedy, Kiro.
Yeah, it's like, I must bring an end to the tragedy of 10 years ago in Law. It's like, if we're basing this on time, my grudge started 13 years ago. And Luffy is like, well, mine is 30. Cavendish is like, shut up, you're not older than me. That would actually be funny if Luffy was like in his 40s. He just looked like he was 19.
Would that even work?
Yeah, anime has done it. But yeah, they get to the third step, and they run into a bunch of skeletal nutcrackers. So, where do these come from? They look like, they look like wind-up toys.
Wait a sec, do you remember when Doflamingo met Moria that one time and actually tried to off them off? Probably off them off. And do you recall anyone that can make something this terrifying, use something this terrifying?
Well, he can make zombies by putting shadows in corpses.
Oh yeah, and if it's in the daylight, then they won't be able to operate. Okay,
yeah,
so.
I don't think it's this. I mean, the design of them kind of reminds me a little bit of the Dios de los Muertos, which would fit the Spanish slash Mexican theme. That, well, I don't know. The Dressrosa theme is a little more Spanish, but I could kind of see maybe sneaking in some Mexican imagery into that as well. But I don't know, my first thought was, and I'm not sure whether this works, was, oh hey, these look like toys, so is this something Sugar did? But she's unconscious, so they wouldn't be, how would they still be active? So you kind of have to wonder, what is the deal with these guys? And where did they come from? But, alright, let's move on. We've got Zoro and Pika that are fighting, and of course Zoro is completely trashing him. But Pika keeps escaping by getting into, by disappearing into the rock, and it's doing absolutely no good. And then, yeah, Rebecca, Bartolomeo, and Robin show up, and they're sort of floating along.
Let me just point the panel where we see Bartolomeo. At first, it looks, he's supposed to look like he's flying, but it looks like he's holding a bunch of fans, and he's like,
"Come on, oh yeah." Yeah, that is pretty funny.
I can probably see fans like, "Hey, Mr. Zoro, wait, why you have fans for?" I don't know. They kind of want a fan for some reason.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of yours, by the way.
Yeah, Zoro's like, "How are you guys flying?" He's like, "Bartolomeo, like, do you remember about my autograph?" And then yeah, and then of course Robin's like, "Hey, you need to keep him occupied. We need to keep moving." And Zoro's like, "Okay, but how are you flying?" And then yeah, Pika's about gets back into the statue and is about to punch them. But Zoro deals with it by just smashing it in half with his 1,800-pound phoenix.
Remember that move? It's the overpowered new version of that move he learned in Skypiea, guys.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and yep, and then, of course, we end it with Zoro being probably one of the more reliable members of the Straw Hats, and him basically saying, "Hey, I'll be the greatest swordsman in the entire world, and I'm on an entirely different level than you." He's gotten really cocky, like really cocky, and it's kind of awesome, actually. He deserves to be.
Yeah, after all those fights he's had where he's been handicapped so badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
really handicapped badly, man. And he still won. Because in the actual fight, there's no such thing as a fair fight, and he always won those fair fights.
Yeah. Now it's just like he's just trashing him.
Yeah, trashing.
Zoro is just, yeah, this was a great chapter. I loved it. And, yeah, and it's also nice, is like, just because, oh, hey, look. Look, it's two of the Straw Hats interacting. That so rarely happens. Yay.
You are a pirate. No, I'm not seeing that song.
What the hell?
No, still better than Medical.
I have no idea why you even mentioned that. But anyway.
I don't know.
Carrying on, yeah, like I was saying, hey, look, Robin and Zoro talk to each other. Yay! While immediately all the shippers are like, oh, they were in the same scene, totally shipping it. Because that's how people have to ship in One Piece. There is no other option, no other hints. All you can do is, okay, let's see, how much closer are these two characters standing together versus these other characters? Oop. They're standing 0.2 millimeters closer to each other than they are to this other guy. Ship it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Great chapter. I liked it.
I liked it. I really liked that last bit where he just went 1080 pounds, being like, holy, just brought down the house right there. And that's the, what Pika is kind of built out, his giant form thing. It's kind of built out of town, so he literally brought down houses.
Yeah, it was like, brought down the town. Yeah, also, did you just say 1080p Phoenix?
No, 1080-pound Phoenix.
No, 1,800-pound Phoenix. It's what? 1800.
Why does it say 1080?
It doesn't say 1080.
It says 1080 on my... No, it says 1080 right here.
Where? It does not. I'm looking at it right now. 1800. That is 1800.
No, I see 1080.
Okay, you're looking at Scanlations.
No, I am not. I am actually on the official site.
Okay, bullshit. That is no way. Okay, what is going on here? One sec. I'm going to take a look at this because I'm looking at 1800 pound
Let's
Phoenix.
divide that by 360 and see if it actually equals a whole number. If I'm wrong, okay, you win.
No, I'm looking at it right now. The version that I downloaded as soon as it came out says 1800.
It should be 18. I don't know why it says 1080.
One sec. Let me pull up the actual the website, not on my iPad.
Okay.
I would re-download it, but no, that'd be a waste of time. Let's see. shonenjump.viz.com. Let's take, but yeah, while we're looking that up, yeah, still 1080p Phoenix videos. But let's see. Sorry, I'm loading this. Actually, wait, this is taking forever to load. Come on. Oh, jeez. You know what?
Oh, well,
This.
divide 1080 divided by 180 is 6, so it's 6 times more.
Okay. But yeah, let's see.
Okay, I might try 1800, see if that is.
Well, we'll take a look. I'm pulling it up right now.
But 1800 divided by 180 is 10 times. I would like it to be 1800, to be honest. Maybe it's supposed to be 1800 because it looks like the 8 is in the wrong place for me.
Well, yeah, are you on the what page are you even on right
I
now?
am on page 102, 103.
This is ridiculous. I'm signing in.
I read from my laptop. Because I don't have an iPhone.
Yeah, well.
I've never owned an i anything, period.
Yeah, well. Oops. Why can I not remember my proper password? Come on, log in.
Oh, humiliating. He can.
Yes, indeed. Okay, what the hell? Whatever. Ignore that. I'll just download it to my phone and check it there. See if they've changed the version since last I looked at it. Which, 'cause, okay, I'm looking at it right now. It's right there. So why on earth would it be? Oh, look. 1080, it's 1800. I don't know what you're
I
looking at.
don't even know why it says 1080 on mine. I don't even know.
You're not convincing anyone that you don't read Scanlations, Mo, because that sounds like the kind of mistake they would make.
No, this is definitely a mistake that they just made. I see it right here. I
But.
am on www.disneymanga.com/reader/ whatever that number is. Weekly Shonen Jump. Issue 129. Well, what? Wait, that's page one. Well, I don't know what that is, but that's what I'm on. I am on the official site. I am not joking. This is what I see. If it's really 1800, I can only assume that somehow there's a little typo that the zero and eight were in that the first zero and the eight are supposed to be switched around.
Well, that doesn't make any sense because
Either
the
way,
one
it's
I
still
download, yeah,
if you still divide by 180, it's still a whole number regardless.
well, yeah, but still, it's the version that I downloaded was the version that was released immediately on Monday, and if the version that you're looking at right now might be the corrected one, which I'm a little confused by.
It
So,
might be the corrected one.
yeah, so I'm trying to see. Come on, will you stupid thing work? Sorry, my phone is being stupid. Let's see. Come on. Show me. There it is. Okay. All right. So I've got. Let's see. I've got this open. Let's see. One trigger. One piece. All right. Oh. Weird. Okay. Yeah. 118,000 was the typo.
I will
Because.
write.
Yep.
Because it would be funny if Zora was 10 times stronger than was in Skype. It'd be hilarious, but
Yeah, that
I
is
think
really
it's because
weird.
of how it's said in Japanese. Trying to say 18,000 probably a little bit more difficult than saying 1080.
I don't know whether that really
I
matters,
don't
but
even know.
it
Maybe
was,
1080,
it's
1080
clearly, it's clearly just a typo, that was fixed later on. But that does kind of annoy me because I'm just thinking, oh, great, so you don't even, you have typos that you fix without even telling anyone, so someone like me, who downloads it immediately, won't know anything unless we do a podcast like this. That's
wonderful. We should totally listen to their podcast and see if they apologize about that at some point.
Yeah, that'd be funny. All right, let's talk about Toriko, chapter 286, Blue Awakens, where we discover that Toriko had a thing that was like a healing water thing, and then it's
curing
like,
water.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, hey, is, you know, it's like, hey, your blue hair, were you born that way? It's like, no, it was black when I was a baby, and then you've got,
oh, wow.
Sunny is like, oh, now that I think about it, only the hair on your head's blue, and I'm like, what parts of him have you seen?
What?
But yeah, and it turns out the red demon, so the manifestation of his power is an actual parasite thing, but turns out there is another terrible monster lurking within him, and he's just lucky that the one who showed up before wasn't him. And you see the water stuff.
You mean
him? Him. You'll see. But yeah, it turns out that the water stuff was, broken, and Torko's kind of badly injured, trying to repair himself. And then, but yeah, it turns out Komatsu had prepared the fruit into something that could be eaten, and you've got the red demon guy that approaches the blue demon guy inside there and says, I need your help. And it turns out the blue guy is kind of crazy, but...
Wait. You mean the red demon was not the blue demon? Wait, what?
Yes, Mo, they're two different people.
Wait, the demon that we've been seeing before this new demon appearance was actually red.
Or yeah.
What color was he?
Red.
You're red. Never saw the anime.
This is why you watch the anime, because it's red. And I'm pretty sure there have been...
I don't ever seen a color spread at all this.
Pretty sure there have been color spreads showing it. And I mean, it specifically says it in... the manga here, the red demon is the one that appeared, the blue demon is the one that is not. So the blue demon is this new guy. And he does weird things with Torko's body, like growing out of it, eating air, or eating one of the air fruits, and then growing himself out of Torko's wounds, like not even just manifesting himself as some sort of otherworldly appearance, but actually, you know, growing directly out of Torko's body, and Torko's like his foot. And this demon can stretch and stuff, and is, you know, powerful enough to actually hurt the red Herak.
Wretch?
Oh, is the Heracles.
Heracles.
Yes. But, yeah, so I have no idea what this new thing is, but it's much more dangerous than previously. So I hope we get an explanation as to why the heck Torko has these parasitic demon things inside him. Seems it's a bit of a Deus Ex Machina, honestly, because I mean, they try to be all like, oh, what, Toriko, why is your hair blue? And it's like, lots of other characters here have really weird hair colors. But then again, I guess if you get down to it, most of the other characters, especially in the anime, had regular looking hair colors. Toriko was the only one with, like, besides Sunny, who had a really bizarre hair color. So I guess he can kind of do that, but at the same time, you've also got, let's see, whatchamacallit. But at the same time, it's like it's introducing this concept of the blue demon at the beginning of the chapter that it appears in. So it's not like something that we've been had built up for at all. So it feels like a bit of a, I don't know, feels like an ass pull, honestly. So not as enjoyable, most certainly.
He can stretch his arm.
Yeah, which, okay, cool, fair enough. Yeah, it was, I don't know, yeah, it's just one of those things that's like, this would be a lot of fun if it weren't for the fact that this was never brought up before and it's only just brought up in the chapter where it needs to be used to resolve a problem. So, yeah.
It wouldn't even make sense by saying, you know, I'm tired of saying that it wouldn't make sense. Anyway, let's move on. That was a
Let's take a quick break here, and we'll get on to the next chapters. All right, it's time for us to continue on with Hunter x Hunter chapter 348, and we're not so much talking about this chapter as we are saying that, since we really don't know anything about this series and are not caught up, and there is so much reading to be done here, I have to say that there's not much more we can do to discuss this series, just because it's, well, yeah. Well, we've only read the first volume and then the past few recent chapters, so we're kind of a little bit...
But yeah. There are some pretty cool moments in this chapter, though, like the dude that was wrestling the bear or lion. What the heck?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was cool and everything. But, yeah, I don't have any context, so.
He's just wrestling a lion while talking to his the other guy on the phone. I'm like, wait, what? It's like just a casual thing I do. So what's up, bro? Why are you doing what the
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the prince from The Princess Bride, from the book, not the movie. Because in the book, it says that he has... Basically, he has a garden, a zoo of death, where he keeps all these dangerous animals that he wrestles. And so that kind of reminds me of this a little bit, which I thought was kind of hilarious.
I totally forgot about that part. I mean, I only read the book once. That's the sad thing about it.
I only read it once either, and I remembered.
I've seen the movie more. That's the thing about it. The movie was more memorable.
The book had
I'm sorry, impact. Willem Goldblum, but, you know, at least you worked on the movie, too, so that worked
He out. Did write the movie, you know.
He did write the movie, yes, he did.
So I don't know why you're apologizing. You'd probably be like, okay, whatever. Right, but anyway, we're not going to actually talk about Hunter x Hunter much on a week-by-week basis because it is kind of hard to discuss when you don't know what's going on.
Well, let's try to mention the main points that was in it. Okay, they tried it. Well, I will then, because I at least want to at least give this thing a chance. Okay, so basically they try and do this testing to try and single out these spies before they take their trip to the Dark Continent. And despite the lie detector and stuff, some people still manage to get through, like that one guy who made Ding his number two or something. And then, of course, then there's that discussion between the prince and his other brother, the one who's wrestling the lion. I'm sure that's a lion beast or something. And then that one cow guy goes to the cow guy who pretty much says there might be a spy among us, a mole among us, and they try and figure out who it is. And well, of course he says in order to actually trust all of us, in order to build that trust, we all have to actually show our abilities, like really show our abilities. And he's like, I can show my ability. Here's my ability right here. Boom. And then end with showing who the mole is,
which is kind of odd.
It's pretty fast.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Well, yeah. All right. Well, we do have, so that's that. Let's move on to the last little bit in this volume, the special one-shot, Shikigami Twilight Days by the creator of Siren. And so to keep things simple, this is basically a story about trying to figure out who is causing these murders by using Shikigami, which are spirits that can possess inanimate objects.
Mm-hmm.
And our main characters are Mako Miyoshi, and let's see, what's the kid's name again?
I don't recall.
Where does it say it? It should say his name somewhere. Come on, where is it? I don't know, anyway, and this kid. But yeah, so basically Mako is a... Yeah. Is a 20-year-old detective who doesn't have much luck. She used to have like this ability to, you know, see things.
His name's Kyosuke.
Kyosuke, okay. Yeah, but Mako used to have this ability to see things, but when she got older, her psychic powers weakened, and so now she tries to just be a detective normally, but she's kind of... There's an interesting trend that I see in a lot of, in a lot of anime and manga, where it doesn't matter what the job is, you always often have these anime or manga where a certain character is, they want to be the best, whatever, the best detective, the best football player, the best whatever, you know, and they always have the characters act in ways that would piss real whatevers off. Like an actual detective would get just pissed right the fuck off.
He just burned this. He would try to burn this and realize, okay, I just burned my iPhone. Whatever, I hate that thing anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, still, it's like, I do, while Mako is kind of one of those typical, oh, hey, I am a I am a manga character who is, you know, who acts in a way that no detective ever would actually act. But I do kind of find her, I don't know, she's entertaining. Her arts, her character design is a little, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to stand out that much. It's a very sort of plain design.
I like plain is my type.
But at the same time, that works for me. I also think it's kind of funny how we get a scene similar to what we get in the first chapter of Fairy Tail, or somewhat similar to when Luffy and Nami meet for the first time, where, oh look, the guy's hungry and the girl treats him to food. I mean, this scene is almost identical to what happens in Fairy Tail, where it's like, oh hey, I haven't gotten any food. Oh hey, here, I will feed you. And oh, I am so happy for the food that you gave me. And then they explain what's going on. Kind of like here, it's like, oh look, this is what Shikigami are. And in Fairy Tail, it's like, oh, dragons and stuff. So yeah, and it's So we kind of from there we basically move on and. We find out that the bad guy that's been killing people using Shikigami is the only other character that we really had more than a panel.
That was like, wow.
It's like, oh, hey, look. This was exactly like one of those crime procedural dramas where the bad guy turns out to be the one person that was introduced to that specific episode. Except in this case, we don't even get to have a bunch of other characters to say, oh, wait, who could it be? No, it's just flat out the one other character that was ever introduced.
You watch a lot of crime drama or something?
Not really, but it
happens. I don't either. I don't even know that stuff. It's like, it starts in the beginning, and then it cuts off to the present. No, that's cool. Geez. Well, yeah. Sometimes it's like that, and then it's like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah. Also, I don't know. Also, I have to say that the whole, oh look, the policeman did it, is not that original an idea, because there was a couple chapters, a small storyline in Zettai Karin Children that dealt with, that had the big twist being one of the policemen is the murderer, you know? He's like a, and he was like a small, low-level psychic person who was used, who used his powers to murder people, and that's almost identical to what we get here. And so but it does seem less, oh, hey, look, what a ripoff, and more, well, yeah, there's only so many stories we can tell here.
I mean, the thing is, I understand what you're saying, it's like, oh, we've seen this a million times. The thing is, the way I see it, people don't want to tell the story that people have not seen at all, because at the same time, that kind of would probably not. It would appeal to people in a sort of way where, hey, this has never been done before, but at some point it's going to be like, I didn't really want to do this. It makes you feel uncomfortable to do this. I always have these ideas in my head when I see these other stories and I go, they could have done this, but they decided to do this, even though it's the same general idea, because they did that, it would probably hurt them spiritually.
Well, but, yeah, but anyway, carrying on with the story, we end up with, Kagami and Haku merge together with Kagami, making his own body into something that can receive a Shikigami. And then you have the typical, the transformation into a tall, pretty boy, basically, which, again, that is something that happens fairly often in manga. But I do think it's kind of amusing how he's all flirting with Mako, and then transforms back, and Kagami is all embarrassed. And so, yeah, this is one of those things where I think the ideas and the plot of the story are not the most original, but I do find that the characters in this one shot are interesting enough that I would like to see this become a series. You know?
It's a one shot, so the final actual bit won't actually be what we think. The detective will probably be like some younger girl about his age, and he might be the older one or something. I don't know.
That was the
or she might not even be in there.
I don't see that happening, because a lot of attention was put on her character and then not actually using her. The only really interesting character, the most interesting character in this, would be kind of silly. But yeah, I mean, I know it's different, but usually they tend, one-shots to series tend to keep the same characters, even if they do make some minor changes in some cases. But
minor
changes. Yeah, for example, in Nisekoi, they use the same characters, or Cross-Manage use the same characters. They just change the story, which this is pretty much exactly what this needs. It's good characters, not such a great story. But, and also there's this foreshadowing of the gates of hell were opened, so this is clearly meant to be something that is going, either it's a one-shot that's pretending that there's more to it, or it's the introduction to an actual series, which if this becomes a series, I would not mind at all, because
it looks fun. I would actually like it if I could continue from this.
Yeah, I find that this would be fun. I like where we're going here. All right.
Now, kind of similar to we review like the first two volumes of Neuro, right?
Rise of the
Neuro Magi.
No, yeah, that.
That one, yeah. What did the detective, like, Yako became the like,
okay, what about it?
I forget it. I totally forgot what I'm saying.
I know, because it's not the same person, and it's.
I know, but
it has the detective thing, but you know, there's a lot of detective manga, so I don't know. This one was kind of interesting in that it didn't really do. This is a detective manga. It was more, you know, there happens to be a detective in here. But I do like the idea of a young person who wants to be, who is a detective, but that's their dream, but they're not having much luck. So I like to see where this would go. But anyway, let's move on to the next manga, and that would be Assassination Classroom, I believe.
Chapter 95.
Yes, let us talk about that one. I'm just opening that right now.
And mistake time.
Yes, mistake time. What's this? All right, let me just make sure. Did I read this one? I'm pretty sure I did. Otherwise, I'm going to... Okay, yes, excellent.
Better have read that one.
Yeah, this chapter.
That was a pretty good chapter.
Yes, it was. Okay, yeah, this is good because already just, you know, just looking and reminding myself of what this chapter is much better than the BS way we were doing it before, where for some reason we're like, we need to be like... two chapters behind because of the way they come out. They're not actually, you know, they come out, it's like, you know, the latest one for the week that we record comes out that.
Okay, that's enough word slapping at me. I get it. That's enough word slapping at me.
Yes, indeed, because I couldn't remember what the hell ever happened in any of them.
Yeah, back then I didn't take notes well enough, so.
Yeah. But, yeah, so anyway, this chapter, they're basically preparing for the upcoming exams. And, you know, Koro-sensei is going like, oh, you know, I'll help you, you know, I'm going to teach you and everything. And then you've got Karasumu who's thinking, oh, I think I'll give them, you know, I'm going after the exams, I'm going to increase the intensity of the trainings, but I also thought I was of giving them a present. And also, I think it's kind of hilarious how Irina is standing looking at his screen, because she is very clearly angling herself so that if Karasumu happens to look at her, he will look all the way down her shirt. I don't know if that's deliberate, but that's entirely what she's doing.
Yep.
And then, let's see, yeah. And it is also kind of funny how it's like, Irina's like, oh, you know what, I'll choose a present for the girls, and then Koro-sensei's like, I'll get present for the boys. It's like, Karasuma, you can get one for Irina. And so I think that's kind of funny because early on he was all perving on her, but that now apparently he's decided to help support her in that.
He's more of a voyeur for this.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway, and then the students decide, you know, they need to get, you know, they want to get home faster, so they're going to practice free running by actually running across rooftops, which at first works really well, but then they accidentally land on a guy and... on this old guy and break his leg, basically.
The funny thing was that one man said, hey, I actually took this path before, and that's the okay. Well, that's just the one time, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, and he ended up, and I do like the way they do the, you know, just the free running, the way it's drawn and everything. But yeah, it does kind of have everyone's like, oh, hey, yeah, we're awesome, etc. And then they get cocky and end up landing on top of a guy.
An old guy, that, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. And he's in the hospital. And, yeah, he's in the hospital. And the kids are in trouble because, you know, they're trying to keep him silent. And Koro Sensei is pretty pissed. Like, really pissed. The most we've ever seen him.
He turns black.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, and then he slaps them all good and is all, hey, you know what, that doesn't count as injuring the students, right? And Carson was like, oh, I pretend I didn't see that. And so, yeah, so it's basically, oh, hey, yeah, you guys are, you know, you got too cocky and you ended up hurting someone. And, you know, they're always like, oh, is this what we call making a mistake? Oh, this feels bad. But, yeah. And then apparently we end the chapter with Koro Sensei saying, you are all forbidden from studying. We're just going to, you know, focus first on studying something else. And then, of course, yeah, Koro Sensei brings all these get well flowers to the old guy, and then he comes in himself and is just like bowing. He's like, I apologize.
That is a never seen Dogeza.
Yeah. That was pretty hilarious. I love that.
He's on his knees.
Yep.
I think the old guy just got a heart attack.
Probably. Well, problem solved. He's not talking. He won't talk to anyone.
Defibrillator time.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Well, let's move on to Shokugeki no Soma, chapter 80, page 2, where this chapter is Takumi loses. And Mimasaka is, you know, everyone's just yelling at Mimasaka. He's like, oh, hey, you're a big, massive jerk. And he, of course, you know, says, hey, what? You know, there's nothing wrong with what I did. And everyone's like, oh. And so then we end up with, yeah, so everyone's, you've got all the people that have moved forward. And then we go to, let's see, and then Mimasaka goes to meet, what's his face? The main character?
Soma! How did you forget?
It's been so long, but yeah, Soma.
Soma.
But yeah, it turns out it's like, why are you in Yukihiro's room? And he's like, I have a duplicate key, and I just love the reactions from, was it Mikumi and what's the other one? I forget. The smaller one.
I forgot her name.
Yeah, well, she's not that important, but yeah, I just love the reactions those two get, and it's just like, ah!
Apparently their reactions are kind of similar to that, to this one manga from Kazuo Umezu, apparently.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So basically, as we've seen of Soma, of Shokugeki no Soma, the series have pretty much been doing lots of references to other popular series.
Mm. Yeah, it does, and it works well, and that was kind of really funny.
Waiting to see a Dragon Ball reference at some point. Definitely,
yeah,
waiting for that.
Probably a One Piece. Let's see, but yeah, and Hayama tells Soma that the semifinals are Kurokiba versus Hayama and Mimasaka versus Soma. And so, you know, Mimasaka tries, is like, hey, let's do it as a, you know, let's do it as a, as a Shokugeki, and I will bet the Mezzaluna. And he's trying to sort of like goad Soma into doing it and like getting him angry and whatnot. And he's like, ah, your friend is being belittled, don't you know? And then, yeah, Soma's basically like, yeah, man, you suck. But you know what? I'll take it up. I'll take you up, but you have to give me all of the tools. And then Soma's like, you know what? If you win, I quit being a cook. And everyone freaks out because he's like, you know, he's like, no, dude, that's not something you can take back.
Yeah, I'm not gonna read something called Shokugeki no Subaru.
I honestly wouldn't mind that because he's kind of hilarious the way they keep switching his character between this complete douchebag to this guy that seems all right sometimes. But still, it's so weird. He's such a fun character. There's so many contradictions and they play around with him so much, it's great. And I also love how it ends the chapter with Soma saying, oh yeah, I'm making this, the stew that I just fed you. Everyone's like, wait, what? And I love that because it is really, it, you know, it's showing that Soma isn't being stupid about it. He's like, you know, he knows, okay, look, dude's going to figure out everything anyway, so I'm just going to tell him. And then I look forward to seeing how exactly Soma is going to defeat him. Because we know he's going to win, obviously, but that's not the question. Right now, the big question is, how will he do it? And that will be kind of awesome to behold, I think. All right. And let's see, did you have anything to add?
No. Well, yeah, I do. With that one panel, the big giant panel of someone saying, I'll quit being a cook. I was like, you know, I mean, because we know how twists are these days. You know, it's like every mangaka, every writer pretty much knows now that what every reader's going to expect. Oh, they're going to probably do this, and then they don't do that.
Right.
You know, just they're trying to avoid. I mean, in the end, we're all kind of like our own Shyamalan in our own way, but at the same time, we're trying to not be too obvious at the same time.
Mm.
And I have to agree, if Soma did lose, that would be very interesting, because at some point he would have to become a cook at some point again, in some way or other, like get back his dignity or something. I mean, well, if he did lose, that'd be the first, well, he did lose to some version, but that was like in a duel, a duel.
You know, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to Fairy Tale Chapter 394, Juvia versus Keys. Which is basically Juvia trying to fight the necromancer. Everyone fighting, but the focus being on Juvia and Juvia being like, hey, is this really the right thing for me to do? And then the necromancer's like, hey, remember, I'm a necromancer, so I'm going to use my dust form thing. I don't know.
Is he being Karthus? I don't know anymore.
He wraps Juvia up in these...
In this stuff
that is very it's very why do you do that? And then of course Lucy gets pinned to the ground by a bunch of skeletons. You're like, okay then.
Wait, why is Lucy getting pinned to the ground? She didn't do anything.
Yeah, fan service and all that. Don't you
like,
know?
I didn't do anything. Why are you attacking me?
Don't you know? You need to show the fan service of the girl with her boobies getting pressed against the ground. It is very erotic.
It's also a fetish. Everybody's got a fetish or some kind of fetish.
Yeah. Yes, they do. Fortunately, Mashima, as shameless as he is, never quite takes that extra step into where I would be pissed off.
He panders into the fetish. So the fetishes.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Especially the ones that like bondage, because Juvia is tied up pretty tight there. And then, I guess he crushes her. And everyone's like, oh no, Juvia, she got crushed. And it's like, you do remember that her ability, which is kind of a little bit unexplained, because how on earth does this make any sense? But, yeah, she turned into water and basically tore Keys apart from the inside.
I'm guessing she learned. We don't even know much about how she got her magic in the first place. So if her magic can make her turn completely into water, then the only type of being I could probably think of, beings I could think of that she learned it from, is either a mermaid, but not really a mermaid, but more like an Udini, which is a water spirit.
Maybe. I don't know whether that will ever come up, but probably eventually we'll get there. But. Yeah, so it's kind of a sad moment because Gray's dad is now gone completely and Juvia feels pretty rotten because she's the one that did it. And, yeah, so then we get a bit of a weird ending where the reason he learned Ice Demon Slayer magic was because End is a fire demon, that power can be passed from father to son, so apparently Gray's an ice demon slayer now, which still doesn't make any sense because... With the dragons, only Dragon Slayer magic can defeat them, but here, regular magic is doing a pretty good job. Does this just mean it's going to be easier?
Well, I'm guessing Natsu will be the one to fight Agnolodian, Gray will fight End?
Maybe.
What?
I don't know.
Well, I don't... All I can say is that I had a feeling that... I mean, everyone probably had a feeling that Gray was going to learn Ice Demon Slayer magic at some point, because, you know... Oh, we should get an upgrade here.
It's appropriate for the arc, but nonetheless, I don't know. It's interesting. We'll kind of see where this goes, but I think overall, I enjoyed this. Overall, I believe. It's this is a pretty decent chapter. I like seeing Juvia, you know, doing well and everything. So that was quite nice. But yeah, so we got that. And all right, let's move on to the seven deadly sins. If the page would load for me. Come on. There we go. Loading, and boom. All right, so loading it to the beginning, and why is the screen black?
I don't know. The screen hates
me. Yeah, well, what chapter is it anyway?
The chapter is 87.
Okay. All right, so this chapter is basically, you know, everyone is now fighting, you know, is there, like, you know, they're all fighting, there's massive, you know, Gil Thunder is badly wounded, and then Bond shows up and starts trying to kill Meliodas. Mm-hmm. And I really love how he does it. He's just like, you know, you can, the art is really good this, you know, this chapter, just because it really does show, just, you know, Bond really doesn't want to do this, especially in the part where, let's see, where was it, let's see, it was a couple pages in, and where he's basically saying,
so I don't want to make this painful for you, don't try to dodge me. That one?
Yeah, well, it's also, no, it's a little past where, you know, when Hawk is saying, is like, you know, you jerk, if you do this anymore, I'll never speak to you again. And he's like, when have we been buddies? You know, shout at me one more time and I'll kill you. And then I love how Hawk is like, you know what, when I get serious, you'll be the one who kicks the bucket. And then, and then Bond is like, oh, please kill me. You know, the goddess has told me that you're from the same demon race who killed Elaine, and that if I kill you, they'll bring her back to life for me. Elaine, you say that name in your sleep a lot, and so on. And I really like, just right here, it becomes very obvious that Bond doesn't want to do what he's doing, but he kind of doesn't have a choice. So he is, yeah, not a happy camper, but yeah. And Meliodas is like, you know what, kill, you know what, go ahead, kill me. If I were you in the same position, I'd do the same thing. And then Bond, and then we skip from there and we go to Elizabeth and Hendrickson. And Elizabeth is like, okay, look, if, you know, I'm not going to let you revive the demon race. Is like, if I'll kill myself if you get any closer. And then we have and then we have Griamore that shows up and says, I will protect you. It's kind of weird. He doesn't look as bulky as he was previously. But yeah. And all right. So yeah, that was that chapter. Good stuff. I liked it.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah, it was good.
Indeed. Yeah. So I think, yeah, it was quite an excellent chapter. I think the part with Bond and Meliodas was handled very well. And I also like the reveal at the end of Griamore coming back in. I don't know, it's kind of odd. It feels like, you know, this is the end of the series, except it isn't really. And so it's, you know, it's an interesting direction. So, yeah. So, yeah, good chapter. I enjoyed it. Did you have anything else to add?
No.
All right, well, in that case, let's go ahead and wrap things up, Mr. Grumpy Pants. All right. This has been Manga Cubed, episode 107.
Six, seven.
We did 106 last week. It's been 107 for the week of July 27th. I think it was 27th, 26th. I can't remember.
28th.
Okay. All right, then. Let's go ahead and wrap things up, starting with the author comments. We have Naruto's Masashi Kishimoto. I recently bought Ocean DVDs and have been slowly watching them. Hashida-san, it really is incredible.
Bleach is to take Kubo. Every time I think about going out to buy a new pot for the living room, it's raining. I ended up just moving my bathroom clock.
All right. World Trigger's Daisuke Ashihara. I won our office pool for the winner of the World Cup. Everyone had to buy me ice cream.
That's cool. Wait, he was betting on Germany winning?
I guess so. I don't know, that doesn't surprise me. Japan nowadays seems to have a bit of an obsession with Germany, which is kind of interesting and also
Not
terrifying to the rest of
surprising.
the world.
Not surprising. I mean, considering Bleach and all these other
Well,
series.
yeah, I was thinking Attack on Titan, the sort of Germanic
I
setting
mean, how long
of.
will it take to first to see something Germany-ish like in One Piece at some point?
I doubt.
I don't think he's seen one yet.
I don't know. We'll see that. That what's his face? Cavendish is from a sort of London-ish kind of island. So,
He's using a sword that's French. Anyways,
that doesn't matter.
Toriko's Michito. Oh, one sorry.
Where
One
are you
Piece.
going? No. Stop.
Nisekoi's.
It's my turn.
Oh.
Nisekoi's Naoshikomi. Wait, no, wait.
Yeah.
It's your turn, but you need to do Nisekoi.
Yes, Nisekoi's Naoshikomi. I shaved ice for the first time in a while and was thinking, was it always this good? It's just ice. Hey, don't diss the ice. I've had that. We actually, this is a certain thing we kind of, it's just something we kind of eat during on Cambodian New Year generally. And I haven't had that in so long either.
I haven't had shaved ice in forever. Again, I was just like, it's just ice. And
I
also,
mean,
I.
you put a little like a sweet milk cream on and then ice and you put whatever stuff in it. And there's always these little eyeball things. I never figure out what they were.
Tapioca?
Oh, that's what they were. They taste pretty good.
I recently watched one of those How It's Made videos. It was about tapioca pudding, and I was just like, okay. Yeah, I don't like shaved ice that much because the problem that I have with it, if it's hot enough that you need shaved ice, it's also going to be hot enough that by the time you get about halfway through, the entire rest of it is melted into a solid clump, which
I
doesn't
see.
work very well for me. So I don't know, you know how kind of like that phase where things go through when they're about to melt, but they're sort of like, they're still icy and so they kind of just fuse together before they finish melting. That's what I can't stand. But anyway, One Piece is Eiichiro Oda. I wasn't able to go to the One Piece escape game held for those involved in creating it. So sad. I might have to sneak into one that's open to the public.
Oh, actually, when I read this, I looked it up because, even though it didn't get the link, I'm like, oh, One Piece Stadium, look it up. I thought it was actually sort of live action type of few days event thing. And it was actually just a fan game, apparently. But I found one, it was actually more like Luffy trying to escape from any lobby or something. And it's just like, he just moves around and gets, collect stars, opens doors. It's like one of those little, those. Get collect all this stuff, move on to the next level, and then the level gets harder over time. And I'm like, oh, it's okay.
Interesting.
Yeah,
All right,
I totally need to send you the link at some point.
All right, next one.
Oh, Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shunbakura. Germany was so powerful in the World Cup. Congratulations, and defender Hummels is too good looking. Wait, what?
All right, Hunter Hunter's Yoshihiro Togashi. Now that I think about it, my rate of losing one of my socks and my inability to locate my car keys are way too high.
Togashi, you need to learn from me. Always 6 times check your things before you leave.
Indeed.
Your
All
house
right.
keys and your car keys and your phone.
Yes. All right then. It's time for us to do our rankings. And
Time.
let's see. One, two, three, four. Okay. Number four is Bleach.
Oh, okay.
What's your number four?
My number four is damn. Actually, it was World Trigger.
World Trigger? Okay. Fair enough. It was a good chapter.
Was good. I guess just in a personal, I still don't feel anything for this sort of series. Maybe it's the art just feels so generic.
I don't know if it's necessarily generic. I don't know. I kind of get what you're saying, but.
I don't know, I guess I get tired of these war arts.
Well, yeah, this has been going on for a little bit. I've been enjoying it, but it does kind of need a wrap up pretty
It
soon.
doesn't say in, it doesn't say invasion part whatever, but I know it's like invasion part 2 million at some point right now. I'm kidding. Part 20.
Right, well. All right, well, number three is Toriko.
Okay.
Just because it was, I don't know. I enjoyed the fighting, but the whole random introduction of that blue demon thing was kind of ridiculous. So, you know. All right, what's your number three?
Bleach.
Okay, fair enough. Why did you like it more than I did?
A little better with the, you know, Mayuri. I guess Kubo's intro just finally got to me. I guess I liked how they introduced with the, you know, oh, like who are you, and all of a sudden, oh, I mean, like, oh, wait, that, I can't hear him, but I can't see if I can hear him, and then they just show the title. Like, just, I swear, Kubo just should just go make movies. It's clear that's what he likes to do in first place. But maybe it's his style, you know. He's trying to do a revolutionary sort of thing. Well, not revolutionary, but, you know, his own thing. Like, hey, let's try to write manga more like movies these days.
Well, yeah. All right. Well, number two is Nisekoi.
That's also mine.
Yes, it was just really funny. I mean, what else can I say? And all right, number one is One Piece, just because it was really good.
So. Kanjuro. Kanjuro.
Yes, that was quite.
I saw him. I was like, I'm so gonna remember that guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, if I can't remember, and you're like, wait, so who's that one guy? The guy with the paintbrush sword. Oh, okay, him.
Oh, cool. Kanjuro. He's all right. Indeed.
Kanjuro.
Yep, that was, yeah, he was, he certainly was a lot of fun. Alright, and that pretty much wraps us up for this week's episode. We thank everyone for listening, and remember that if you wish to leave comments, go to burninglizardstudios.com or look us up on iTunes, Manga Cubed, a manga podcast, or if you want to go ahead and send us an email to burninglizardstudios@gmail.com. We will gladly read it on the air. And yeah, that is about it. So like us on iTunes, I guess you like. I don't know.
I thought you were going to say Facebook at some point. Like, wait, what?
We don't have a Facebook page.
Okay.
Yep, but anyway, I think we'll finish things there. Remember, people, the manga is always better.